When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hey, what's going on, guys? Happy Wednesday. Thank you so much for listening to this podcast. As always, so grateful for you guys. Don't forget, I'm going to be answering three of your dog training questions. If you want me to answer your specific question, head over to the iTunes review chart and leave your review and your question in the review. If you're listening to this on Spotify, the review goes a really long way for us. That's honestly, guys, how podcasts works, it seems. Nobody really knows. The more reviews you have, the more people get to see your stuff. So if you guys can do me a solid favor, I do this for free. It takes me hours out of my day. Go over to the review chart, leave your review. If you want me to answer your specific questions, iTunes is the only way to actually type out reviews, so you can do that there. This is a different podcast, something that we haven't done much of before. So this is exciting for me and for you, I'm sure. This is a podcast with a nice family that is bringing their dog to a dog training facility that I know about, and it's a good dog training facility, and I recommend them, and they're struggling with their dog that is basically acting neurotic, and so it's on the borderline of, is this dog actually neurotic? Does this dog have mental retardation, or is this dog just pushing against the owners and being malicious and being aggressive and not having discipline and structure, and maybe this isn't the right fit, and it's just this whole walking through the process. So these guys are doing absolutely wonderful. It kind of made me tear up a little bit in the beginning just because I felt their pain, and I was just so happy for them to do the amount of work that they were doing to help this dog out when I know that most people wouldn't. So just really, really nice people, and doing everything that they can to make this successful for you guys. And I typically, to be honest with you guys, whenever I get a conversation like this, I don't put it out to the public. There's nothing in this conversation that I felt like was something that wanted to be left private. Those are conversations I don't put on the podcast. But it was just an emotional conversation for these guys. But I think that this is going to be really helpful for those of you who are really on that edge of where these guys are at, where they're like, what are we doing wrong? What should we be doing? And it kind of goes through all that. So I think it's going to be really good for people who are at that spot. Anyway, so make sure you listen to the end. I'll be answering your three dog training questions. And of course, don't forget to join the No Bad Dog Members Club. Again, I've added my training staff to the pro team. So if you guys sign up, you have access to my pro team and all of the benefits of having all the unreleased YouTube videos on there, as well as me going live once a week and asking me questions face to face. Link is in the description below. As always, good day and have fun in the podcast. See you at the end. Nice to meet you guys. I'm Tom.
Hi, Tom. So we've had some pretty severe aggression and biting incidents, and we're scheduled actually for Murphy's first intensive board and train with a local facility starting next week. And it's been a very difficult first couple of months emotionally. We're all kind of have our nerves pretty frayed. And Elena can go into exactly what's happened, but I guess we're looking from you with all of your experience to give us some insight and understanding about why what's happening might be happening, because we really don't know enough about dog behavior to really understand it, which adds to our frustration. Mm-hmm. And to the extent possible with what you learn from us, what the kind of prognosis might be for this kind of a behavior and this kind of dog. So Eleni can tell you more about Murphy.
How old is he?
Eight months.
So he's border. Well, when we got him, we only knew he was probably Great Pyrenees. We did Embark tests on him. He's half Great Pyrenees, 40% Border Collie, and 10% Australian Kelpie, which we didn't know. Obviously, three working dog breeds. His mom was a stray in Texas, and We didn't know who his dad was or what he looked like, what type of breed he was. And we rescued him in New Jersey because they brought his litter of puppies up to New Jersey, where I went to school. So, and we've had him since April.
And he was born in February. So yeah. We got him how old?
8 weeks? No, 10 weeks.
10 weeks old. So the first time we,
So you've had him for 7 months?
Yeah.
Okay. And he's been to, we first started out with resource guarding. When he was 10 weeks old, kind of, we didn't really know whether to differentiate from puppy biting to maybe some more concerning signs of aggression. He would kind of just latch on to pant legs but I don't know, you had the biggest experience with
just...
It growling, seemed like normal.
Growling, snarling. Yeah. But I mean, there was even more growling, snarling, a lot of mounting, grabbing pant legs.
And then he, from a pretty early age, he was showing signs of resource guarding with food, just growling. And then that slowly escalated to where he would be leaving something that he had to go and lunge at people. We had probably the first serious incident with a bite when he was maybe 3 or 4 months.
We were told to start feeding him by hand, so we did that, and he did fine. But whenever someone else would walk by, the first incident was when somebody was feeding him by hand, and somebody walked by, and he left that and lunged and bit. Nicole had a rawhide thing. He was chewing on a rawhide thing by her feet, and she... just calm, and she moved her leg, and he lunged at her, latched onto her arm. And this was 5 months ago, probably.
Yeah.
And since then,
That was when we started. We were with an original trainer, just working on mainly. This is our first dog, so we were working on mainly puppy obedience stuff, and then those signs of resource guarding started to show up.
But.
Slight growling if someone got too close to him when he was sleeping, but the only time he had ever bitten anyone was concerning food. At that point, we stopped giving him anything of value outside of his crate.
Mm-hmm.
And then he got neutered, and he has unattached dew claws, so the vet wanted to take those off a few weeks ago. And ever since then, I don't know if he felt particularly vulnerable after the surgery or what, but ever since then, it's just been a slow climb we can't even get near him sometimes without him lunging at us and trying to bite us. There was one incident where he lunged up and grabbed my mom's thigh and wouldn't let go because he was kind of standing near the door where we used to keep his food. Now we don't even keep his food in the house. And just out of nowhere, was kind of starting to get up. Like, he looked like he wanted to say hi to her and just lunged at her. The other day I was walking him to take him up to go to bed. He wasn't sleeping or anything. He was starting to walk upstairs. We still keep a leash on him on the house. So I was going to grab the leash. He jumped up on me, grabbed my thigh. I backed away. He came at me again, grabbed my back, and then grabbed my hand. And then since then, we've been wearing...
So was it before that or after that we started the muzzle?
We had been implementing the muzzle, trying to condition him to be comfortable with it before then. But until probably a few weeks ago, we felt relatively comfortable with him just being around the house, with him coming up to pet us and stuff like that. Or petting him when he came up to us. And then ever since the last few weeks, anytime he's not outside and we're not engaging with him with anything, he has the muzzle on. We do a lot of stuff outside to engage him because he's obviously a working breed. He loves Frisbee. Because we're also kind of frustrated because that was one of the things we were also told, is that maybe he's not being fulfilled in that aspect. But he gets lots of exercise, lots of mental stimulation.
Other things we can kind of tell you is that all the incidents have been in the house. And the downstairs.
Well, he was, as a puppy, he was very friendly to other people. never barking or super reactive towards other dogs. And then slowly around 4 or 5 months, when we started noticing some of the other behaviors escalate, he would start snapping at people out of nowhere without any food involved, nothing. He's bitten both of our grandparents a handful of times.
Not as serious as what happened
here.
Most of the incidents appear usually happen when his demeanor changes in the evening, when it looks like he's tired. And I don't know if that's a common thing with dogs, but it's been more likely to happen when he's tired.
Yeah.
And you can see his posture is kind of a little more mopey. Like today, I mean, this morning he was aggressive with me when she had to get him up early to go to work, and we had him down here, and he lunged at me, and I had to get the muzzle on him and put him back in the crate. And then today, this afternoon, running around outside, it's like, it's Jekyll and Hyde. We spend 85% of the time with a dog that we seemingly love and mm-hmm. spending time with, and the other 10% is obviously nothing that we can't live with long term.
Okay.
Sorry.
No, don't be sorry. It's a couple things. The first thing is you guys are doing a great job at doing the right things. So just, you know, be a little bit, give yourselves, you know, a pat on the back for putting in the work with a dog like this, because oftentimes dogs would just be put down or be back into the shelter or something. So I appreciate you guys doing as much work as you have and spending as much time and as much dedication as you had on this dog and continue to. So I give you guys a lot of credit for that, first of all, because it's tough. It's really challenging. Trust me, I understand. Not many people would do the things that you guys are doing. So thank you for that. It is going to be difficult for anybody. And the reason is a lot of this could be some genetics. And if it's a genetical thing, only time will tell on what's going to happen. As you guys have already seen, as he's progressed and matured, time is already changing the dog a bit. I'm sure the neuter and being under that amount of stress, you know, being in the vet office and anesthesia and being handled by a bunch of vet techs and things like that, it can be kind of traumatic for dogs, and they could be edgy a bit after. And obviously, when dogs are fixed, they lose all their testosterone, which can, I mean, it could throw off anything, you know? So there's that. There's just a lot going on. So that's like the first thing off the rip is, if this is like a genetical, almost like a retardation type of thing, which isn't common. However, it does happen. It's basically neurotic behavior, unpredictable, no triggers, no variables, no sense of control. There's nothing anybody can do about it other than trying to find somebody else that can maybe deal with it or handle it. Again, it's not a rare. It's not a common thing. It's a really rare thing for that to happen. But even with that happening, there's also a lot of things that you guys can do that can help with coping with a dog like this. And again, I know, and it, you know, when you said this is your first dog, I was like, oh man, because I just, there's something in my head that, you know, makes me think, you know, I'm so team dog that I'm like, oh, this is going to ruin. You're never going to want a dog again after this. So
I just tell you something about that. Cause she wanted this dog, and she knows, she admitted that she got the dog based on a picture. Yeah. And without knowing anything about him or the breed or anything else. And we know that at this point, but we're willing to put in the time and resources, and we're lucky to have the financial resources to do what we do.
Right.
She wanted a dog that she can cuddle with and sit on the couch and love and kiss. Mm-hmm. And we already know, even if we can straighten this out, he's not that kind of dog, at least right now.
Yeah. The one thing too, that one of the trainers locally that we talked to, some of it makes sense to me, but she was saying that he just might not be a dog that is meant for a home life and might be a dog that needs some sort of job to do, or even something, or even an owner that has a lot more experience with working with dogs than we do. And we also live lifestyles and have works habits where we need a dog that someone can come in and watch, or we can take somewhere. And I don't really know if this dog is ever going to be that for us. So that's a whole nother aspect that we're kind of coping with.
Yeah. And that's fair, right? That's, that happens, you know? And like I said, I think that you'll probably never get a dog like this again. You know, that's one of those things that if you get, you know, you kind of pick a dog out of a litter and it just so happens to be like this, the chances and the odds of that happening are just so slim that, you know. So the other thing is like, I totally understand where you're coming from, and it may be true where this dog is not. So there's a difference between, I just had this conversation with my mom today. She came over and I was just saying, you know, I want to pet again. I lost two of my pets. So there's a difference between my dog, Lakota. She's a Dutch Shepherd. So she's like a Malinois. She's a working dog. Mm-hmm. And she's not a pet. So like, she won't be on the couch laying with you, cuddling with you, sitting by the fire with you. She could care less who you are. I was telling my mom today, I said, my dog would play ball with a murderer and not care. Like, she just doesn't care. Like, she just wants to play ball and she doesn't care who it is. So there's pluses and minuses to that. Like, the pros are the simple fact that I just went to London and did a seminar for a week and a half, and my dog could care less that I was gone because the people who were staying here were throwing ball with her. So that's cool. That's a huge, you know, my pets would be depressed. They'd be sulky. They wouldn't eat good. When I came home, they'd be like, oh, woe is me. My dog. Now. So my point is genetically wired dogs for working tasks are not good pets in general. They don't make good pets. They don't want to be pets. It's kind of like putting a square in a round hole. It just doesn't fit. Now, if you have good training and you have decent environmentals and socialization, like my dog Lakota, she's friendly with people. She likes people. She's tolerable and neutral with other dogs. But my point is this may be that dog that may be just a working dog that needs to have a job and need to go out and have the pushiness that he has. But I think let me just explain to you what I think you guys are in and what I think you guys should be focusing on. Is I think you guys should all take a deep breath and zoom all the way out and go out of what's happening and just understand that a lot of the things that you guys are working on are going to be completely out of your control. No matter how much money you put into it, no matter how much time you work on it, there's going to be certain things that you're not going to be able to change. And my recommendation for you guys is, of course, to work with somebody who does have physically work with somebody who has the experience, background, and knowledge to say, hey, this is what this is. It's kind of like we see these rare cases where certain people like myself can just look at a dog for like 5 minutes and just be like, yeah, I know what's going on here. I've seen this before. And then from there, you guys will then say, okay, because I think that the state of mind that families such as yourself kind of get into, because I'm a dog lover and dog owner way before I professionally work with dogs, right? So I've been with dogs since I was an infant. We have pictures and videos. They've been a part of my life my whole life, right? I have a family. We've always had dogs, and I understand where you guys are at. And I think if you guys were my blood relatives, I'd be telling you the same thing, that I think you guys have this project of a dog. And I think you guys are doing all the right steps to say, hey, this is not this bratty dog that won't listen. It could be some of that. But this could be a genetically wired dog that needs to be working and not in a family home. And I think you guys putting in the work to making that like a realization is going to be the best thing to happen to this dog, because most people would say that dog would be trying to fit in tons of homes, and then it would then he would just get put down because people are trying to put that square in a round hole. Excuse me. So I think what you guys should do, and we're going to talk about training, but I just think at a macro, at a big scale, is you guys are doing all the right things to, and I think the state of mind you guys, and I think you kind of do, I know it's going to be kind of sad and maybe tough, maybe not, to say, hey, you know what, why don't we try to find a different home for this dog that can give this dog what it needs, and then next time, the next round that we have to, you know, getting a puppy or getting a dog, now you know what to look for and you know what questions to ask and stuff. So I think you guys are doing everything right by this dog, and you're doing the best that you can by just saying, I'm going to give this dog to a professional. This professional is going to plug this dog in, and it's going to look at the graph and go, this is what you got, and here's what I would recommend. And then you guys go, oh, okay, this is where we're at. We don't own a farm and chickens and goats and ducks for this dog to be working all day. We don't own a kennel that's outside that this dog should be living in to protect the animals from coyotes. Like, that's just not us. So we're going to basically then foster this dog until we can find the right fit for this dog and somebody to work with this dog. But this dog is coming with thousands of dollars of training, as well as behavioral assessments from some of the best behaviorists in the country, and you guys have everything that kind of goes with this dog with a freaking ribbon on it to say, like, hey, this is everything that we know, because many people don't have that opportunity. They're like you. They're searching for a dog that's cute. They see this cute picture and they say, oh, I want that dog. You can then say, hey, you know, it's like having a car, right? You can say, hey, the guy that everyone loves down in Tennessee has tuned up this, and the guy up here up in New York's been tuning up. This is like a well-tuned machine for the right person. So, and I'm saying this because I don't want to waste your time and I don't want to beat around the bush. I think, judging from what I'm hearing, from what you've said, I think that's the first thing I want to say. That's what's up. I think that you guys, there's a good chance that you guys are going to say, this is not what any of us signed up for, but also understand that the dog's happiness is also predicated off your selflessness to then say, this isn't, why are we trying to do this? This isn't the right fit.
And I know that's been a hard realization too.
Totally. I'm trying to say it the way.
Can I ask you a question about that, Tom?
Yeah.
Because I think we could have arrived at that conclusion potentially even without the biting issue, just in terms of, okay, we just can't handle it. He's not happy. We're not happy. This isn't the right fit. Have you seen scenarios where someone with a dog like that has injured or could injure people could go to, because the worst case scenario for us was that we'd have to put.
Yeah. It's a liability. I understand.
To put it down. I can't think about that.
Yeah. The answer is yes, because I think it's tough, because being a dog owner and a pet owner is a completely different. It's like the difference between like going down to the city and working in the city in an office job, and then going to Montana on a dude ranch. Like, you're both still working hard. You're both good at what you do, but man, are these things freaking different. So the answer is yes, because again, it's taking a dog that we're trying to fit into this, like, the life, your lifestyle, and that it's just not clashing. So again, you're going to, once somebody that actually handles this dog, they'll go, like, handling him and like letting the person touch the dog is going to help. But I think that that's more for that person. Like, I don't know. Have I seen historically working dogs being fit into pet homes not do well in a home that has them work? Yes. We see that all the time. It's like, this isn't, your dog is supposed to be doing A, B, and C every single day, and you guys are doing D, F, X, you know? So again, like, that's why I want you to take it day by day and step by step to say, hey, we got everything lined up. We're doing every, like, and I'm telling you from somebody who has created a brand to let dog owners know how much they fail their dogs of no bad dogs. Like, that's my whole thing of like letting people know and advocating for dogs. Like, hey, this is not your dog's fault. I'm telling you, dogs like this have a different perspective that you have to look at. And you just let, you just need to trust. And if I were, if I didn't know this company that you were going to, I would be saying like, you need to find somebody who really says stuff to you guys that you need to hear, not want to hear. So I think that that's where you guys should be at with him. And I think you're doing everything right so far by playing it safe. Do you have any questions on that before I can give you like some things to actually start implementing? When are you guys going into the connection?
So we actually, and this is I think a testament to their, how good they are. First, when we met with them for an hour consultation, they told us that too, that he might not be, he's a working dog and he might not be compatible and we'll have to see. And the point would be to keep, you know, get him to a potentially a family that, or a place that would be good for him. But also when we told them about the escalation, they stepped up and they expanded from 4 weeks to 6 weeks and they got us in starting next week.
Beautiful.
Because we were, originally it was the end of October and we were just like, we're at the end of our, where everybody's walking around the house fearful, scared, and eggshells, and
we also scheduled it too when it was mainly a resource guarding concern. So more.
So next Monday to answer your question.
Yes, sorry.
Beautiful. So that's great. Typically I would dive into a lot of training information, because I wouldn't know the company that you're going in and they probably weren't going to give you as sufficient information typically, but they should. But I will say again, from a professional's point of view, I'm an expert in this. This is my bread and butter. This is the only thing I do. I don't do puppies. I don't do basic obedience. This is what I do. Behavior. This is it. And you guys are doing everything right and you're giving this dog the best opportunity. And I don't think that you are. I think you guys have a good headspace for this. But sometimes dog owners can get like, they feel defeated or they feel like they're not doing enough. And I don't think that you guys think that, but I just want you guys to keep this little nugget in the back of your head, knowing that this dog is lucky to have you. And I know that you know that because there's many people who would have just, this dog would have been out.
Yeah.
So
can't afford.
Right. And you're giving the dog every opportunity to have a successful life under the circumstances. And I think that's what anybody could ever ask for, is every opportunity to do good. And if it does come out to be a dog that just needs more structure, needs more job, needs more stimulation with the right household and can be safe there, then that's great. And you guys are basically just, you fostered this dog you thought you were going to keep and you're like, hey, this isn't the right fit. We're both going to be unhappy. It's not going to make sense. This dog is going to go to a farm and, you know, wherever. And then you guys, whenever you're ready, can do it all over again. but really, so that's it. Now, as far as training goes, I do have a couple questions I want to try to dig into to try to give you guys some immediate things to work on. So I know that you said exercise. So what does the exercise for this dog look like on an average day?
Typically, it is somewhat dependent on the day of the week, but we typically try to do at least 2 walks a day. On the weekends, that may be as many as like 5 or 6 miles. And then we do a lot of ball, fetch, frisbee activity, throw, comeback. And one of the questions I had for you was about that kind of activity, because we didn't want to do anything that it would encourage aggressiveness, and you can't get a straight answer online because he loves to do anything where there's your tug of war type of, he has the ball, he wants to keep the ball, he comes to you, but then goes away because he wants you to try to get it from him, and then you throw it and he brings it, and we'll do that for hours.
And he's very, you can watch too in how he behaves when we're playing, how he like stalks things. It's incredible, it's very obvious that he has like a lot of instincts like that. So we really try and bring that out when we're playing with him outside.
Yeah. And I think it's important, the walks that he gets. We live near a nature preserve, so it's not just walking down a city street. It's woods, paths around the lake.
And in the last 2 weeks, I've done probably 4 off-leash walks with him. He's been very good with it. We haven't started the e-collar. We bought it, but we didn't want to start that because we didn't want to
set him back. There's never any other dogs over there.
It's probably 20 acres. He can run everywhere. And so we've done that a few times. And, that's been really fulfilling, I could see, for him. And then he comes back and he's exhausted. So...
yeah, that's good. All that's good. It's all great. Going back to your kind of your possession question.
Yes.
Yeah, the reason why you probably can't find a good answer is because the internet doesn't. It's not. You know, you can find whatever you want on there, right? It's not. So, but it is difficult. So you want. This is what I'm saying. Is like I feel like I know that the structure and. Gatekeeping can definitely help your relationship, because right now, if he is getting away, because he's young enough, one of the best things about this dog is he's young enough to, it's a catch 22. It's kind of damned if you do, damned if you don't, because you shouldn't be seeing this behavior out of a young dog, but also because he is young, you have a lot of potential to market as opportunistic, bratty, what can I get away with? Are you going to do anything about it type of behavior? I'm going to bite you. Does that work? Oh, that works. Cool. That's what I'm doing now.
Yeah.
So you'll have to start without having too much conflict, work on that. That's the first thing I would do. I'd say like, if I met this dog, it would be, this is what's going to help you the most of like what you're telling me is I would say, hey, go here. Here's a slip leash. Put this on nice and snug. I'm going to bring him for a walk. And then I'd probably bring him around the block a couple times and I'd let him be a dog. I wouldn't care if he did any, I'm just like, let's get some energy out. Let's sniff some new places. I'd come back and I'd start immediately working on a food drive type of threshold work. So I'd have him on my slip. I'd have my treat pouch. I have a squeaker and a treat pouch, and I have my, my beef here. And so I just squeak it, and he look at me like this, and I pay him just a little bit of food. So I have little blocks of beef liver freeze dried.
Yeah, we bought it.
Cool. So I have those Stewart's beef liver treats, and what I would do is just get the dog on me, and I'd start walking backwards, and he'd follow me, and I'd start paying him with that square, and he'd lick it, and he'd try to get it out of my hand, and I'd take it away, and I would start basically paying this cat and mouse type of game where he needs me more than I need him, right? So he's like, hey, come back there with that. Give me that beef liver. Give me that, right? And I make it fun, right? I'd be, yes, good. And I wouldn't really ask any behaviors for the first 30 seconds. I would just backpedal around this room, pay the dog. And I'm, everything that I do is on the fly. Every time I work with a dog, every time I talk to a dog owner, I'm thinking out of instinct. That's how I work. That's how I'm where I'm at. I have an instinct. And so I'm just kind of talking this out as it's coming into my head. So I'm walking backwards. I'm paying the dog. So I'm immediately starting to create this transactional, like, hey, you have something for me type of thing. Dogs like this, you almost have to manipulate a bit, where if you come in like, I'm in charge, I'm dominant over you, and you're not, you know, that's that. There's a time and a place for that. But when you're dealing, it's kind of like a movie where you have this kind of malicious character that you have to kind of buddy up with, and then you flip the script.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Yeah. So that's kind of what I would do with him is like, hey man, I know what you're capable of. I know your history. I know your MO of when you get frustrated or mad, right? But let's just start this off with a transactional thing. Hey, follow me, you get paid. Follow me, you get paid. Follow me, you get paid. And then after about 30 seconds of just talking to him, yes, good job, good, just like having some fun with him, I'd just say his name. I'd say, sit. And then if he offered me a sit, yes, good sit, break. And then I'd just walk backwards. And I would start off on this transactional respect, mutual, let's do a little bit of work for a little bit of stuff. And then what I would do is I'd kind of go up to a kennel or a crate, take the slip off, or I'd leave the slip on, pop him in there, leave him in there for like 10, 15 minutes, come back, grab the slip, do the same thing. And then I'd start to teach him, like, I have everything that you want. I have everything that you're going to want. And then what I would start to do is thresholds. So I'd say, what's your dog's name? I don't think I wrote that down. Murphy, right? So I'd say, Murphy, sit, right? And then the dog would go into a sit. I'd take a piece of food, and I'd work on that sit, that implied sit. I'll say stay, if you guys use stay. And I'll just take a bowl, like a metal bowl, usually metal bowls for dogs. That's what they eat out of, drink out of. They're like, I know what that is, right? Put the treat in the bowl. I put the thing down and I just hold that. And so it starts to create this boundary setting accumulation of bowl means food, food means bowl. This is yours. And the dog typically will kind of go for it. Sometimes not. But when they're in that sit, I'm like, hey, so if he went for it, the bowl came out, he got up, he's like licking his chops, like, great, put that stuff in there. And again, I'd be mindful, depending on his body language. Like if I felt like he was eyeing me, if I felt like he was getting too frustrated, I would then probably do a little bit more muzzle work with him as I was doing this because of his history of kind of being explosive. So yeah. If you guys were to say, like, you know, he's probably going to come after you, I'd say, fine, put a muzzle on and let him come after me. No worries. So don't get too granular on that type of stuff. I'd be reading that as we go. So, but the principle would be putting the food bowl down, holding the sit, and then breaking him on my terms. And this is something that you guys could even do. Like if he's conditioned with the muzzle where you feel comfortable putting on, these are things that you could start trying. And basically what this does is it kind of red light, green lights the dog of things are on my terms. Because I think at the very least of what's going on is this dog is probably getting away with a lot of stuff.
Well, can I say something about sure. that? Because I think you're right. And as you know, when he got aggressive, it's so scary. And these two have been injured. You just react and you scream, you yell, mm-hmm. you shriek, you move away. And he won.
Yeah.
And so we're better at that now because we have the muscle and we're not, when he has it on, we're not scared we're going to get injured, but it's still, one of our questions was how should we react in the moment when he does like what he did this morning? What should we literally do in terms of our, what we yeah. say, what we do, how should we react?
Yeah. So you guys would be lucky if that's the case. Like if that is the case, that would be the best case scenario for you.
Just getting away with stuff.
Yeah.
Okay. But,
yeah. Let's pray for that.
Yeah.
Cause that you can work with. That is yes. neurotic, mental retardation. You cannot.
Yeah,
you can't. Right? Yeah. But if
can I ask a quick question about that? Yeah, sorry. Yeah, yeah, with the fact that someone had mentioned that the two drives for a Great Pyrenees and a Border Collie, since they're kind of opposed, could that possibly be part of it? That he has like these opposing drives in his head, a part of the genetic.
I don't try. Yeah, it's a little far fetched for me. I take like. Listen, dog breeds are obviously a play, but they're not every play, you know?
Yeah.
Like I've met lazy border collies before.
Yeah.
I've met, but again, like if, I don't know. I mean, to me, having a guardian behavioral dog and then a dog that herds, I don't know why they would be like marked as opposite. I don't know why they would be that opposite. I mean, I think they're two different things. I don't think I would go along, but I think there's, okay. So I think in my experience, it's not wrong. I am not right and vice versa. Because like you said, you looked online and you're going to get 10 different answers. Everybody has their own way of doing things. In the dog world, you know, it's just like anything else, right? It's like an artist or a musician, right? Like, how are you going to tell a local musician band that plays their own original music that they suck compared to Billie Eilish? All you can look at is the awards, the sold out arenas, the accolades, everything. It's like, they don't necessarily suck. They're just not as scalable, or they're not as helpful to some people. So the dog training world's this weird place. But my point is I find that some people get so involved in the philosophy of the different, like they philosophize too much instead of like getting into the nitty gritty. It's like, I don't know. So I wouldn't, okay, take it with a grain of salt, in my opinion, and I do, but breed is huge. It's absolutely enormous, right? If I get, if I get an intact 8-month-old Rottweiler, I know how that dog's going to act. 100%, right? If I get a 6-month-old Border Collie, Belgian Malinois, I know how that dog's going to act. Breeds are very, very much a part of it. But to go on to saying like, well, you know, it's like, it's creating like a cake. It's like, well, there's a dash of, you know, lab in there. So maybe because the dog wants to splash in the water that the Great Pyrenees is not, it's like, it's too much. So don't worry about that too much. But, anyway, so what I was saying, I think was, when you're trying to do this, yeah, I think the dog has gotten away with stuff. Again, like dogs are so conditioned animals, and it very well could be a young working dog that has gotten away with stuff and has been rewarded through a certain behavior. So if he lashes out and starts to act aggressive or barks in the other room until he gets what he wants, that's what we've trained him to do. So he wants to act like a working dog, I would be treating him like a working dog, which means it would be when you're out of the crate, you're working, you're mentally, you're not like, and I don't think he's doing this now. He's not roaming the house, like looking for a couch to lay on. Like these dogs, if they're not like doing something, then they're going to get into trouble. So I would say start to create, like my dog is obsessed with everything, like a ball, a tug, a treat, whatever. I know, again, I talked about this earlier, if you guys came into my house right now, I'm like, boom, and I gave you a bite pillow, I'm like, go outside. My dog is going to perk up, not know you at all, wag her tail, jump up and down, and go out the door and go, let's do this. Mm-hmm. So that's the type of, you want to set this dog up for success to say, when this dog comes out of this crate, I want to have everything in line that's going to help this dog be successful. That's like the plus side. That's the benefit to the dog of having something to do. The other side to that is having boundaries set up to say, hey, yeah, here's a bite pillow, here's a tug, here's a ball, here's a treat, but you got to work a little bit for this. You got to down, you got to sit, you got to heal, you got to do whatever, you got to stay, throw it, okay, break.
Really doing that, because he when he has a ball or has something, you have to pry it out. There's no command and
so then, so I wouldn't, so no training is better than bad training. So if you have a young, worky, opportunistic, taking advantage over the family type of dog, don't ask the dog to do something you're not ready to enforce and back up. So if he has a ball and he takes off with it and you go, Murphy, come, Murphy, leave it, Murphy, drop it, Murphy, give it, Murphy. He's going, yeah. Like it's the Charlie. Okay, good.
Yeah.
So I wouldn't, this is a dog that you just, like, you got to be very careful about. You have to think about how you're handling this dog a little bit more. You got to like have a game plan almost, which is weird because you wouldn't think like, I'm just going to go play with my dog. It's like, this dog's a little different. So you just have to have like, okay. So again, I think being on the leash is going to be important because that's the information you can provide. It's very on your terms. The muzzle I think is just as important because at least you guys will have confidence knowing that if you are pushing boundaries a little bit, that if he does lash out at you, you can remain as calm as you can. You're going to be fine. You just kind of correct them off and say, hey, that doesn't get you what you normally get out of that. And that's what I would be doing is I would just be, when we're out, we're working on thresholds. We're working on challenges. We're working on pushing the limits and pushing the border of like, I want you to work for me. Like, you got to work for your food. You have to ask for permission to leave the table. And that just creates respect. It creates boundaries. It creates everything that this dog will need in order to understand that there's some sort of job that has to be done before we just go out and play.
Can we ask you a practical question about feeding him from a safety point of view? We're trying to figure out the right timing and the way to do it, because like today we kind of almost had an incident where if he knows you're getting his food and he runs to the crate and then he's standing outside of it, and then we have to get the muzzle off, and then do we put the food in the crate? Do we have him? We've tried different things. We just kind of want to know from your, with his history, mm-hmm. what would be the safest way for us when it's time to eat? And because we've only been feeding him in the crate, how should we go about doing it?
And you haven't, I thought you said earlier that somebody had recommended were hand feeding. Yeah.
And then Canine Connection said, told us to stop.
Just stop doing that and just feed him in the crate. Because we had a biting incident doing the hand feeding because, you know.
Okay. So it was more of a liability. Like,
yeah.
Okay. so I would say, I mean, I want you to listen to your trainers, but I can give you two sides and you can pick what makes sense to you. That's the internet, right?
Yeah.
So I think there's two things. I mean, obviously you don't want to create conflict. Okay. So you don't want to create conflict with a dog that can cause a lash out, because then you're kind of like, shame on me. I basically was playing roulette with this dog, right? Where you know he has somewhat of a lash outing type of response. He can be random with it. And so by holding and possessing the thing that he usually does it for, may be a mistake. But at the same time, if you can make it a positive association, which is the benefit of hand feeding to some dogs, or all dogs, but some levels of spectrums, like some puppies, it's just good to say, hey, sit, be patient. Okay, now you can have it. And then with your dog, it would be same thing I was talking about with thresholds, sit, good, break. So I think the reason why you shouldn't is because that it could create that hey, what does your dog want to bite you over? And it's like, let's play with this in the dog. But at the same time, it also gives you the opportunity to take away that advantage that he has.
And so, that's honestly been one of the, we taught him to stay through hand feeding. Yeah. And that's probably one of the things that he's better at. He's good at, because you have something that's so valuable to him. So maybe that, I don't, maybe we could hand feed him through the muzzle.
You can, I have, it depends on what type of muzzle you have. Have you had an incident with the hand feeding before?
Yeah.
Okay.
I was hand feeding him, and he would sit, stay. I would hold the food out. I say, okay, he comes, he eats, he sits back down again. Unfortunately, this time some of the food got stuck on my hand. And so he started to back away. There was still food on my hand because his wet mouth was wet food. And he just lunged and grabbed onto my arm.
Like two sucks. And he snapped at me before without actually biting me, concerning him.
Yeah. So, and again, this is where, you know, it's kind of like going back to the same conversation I had before with you is this is going to take, like, I'd have to see it, just like your company now has to see it. But for me, there's also like a really big thing in here that I don't think he's been really corrected for it either. So that's like a big missing piece here is, let's face it, we have a dog that has been doing these things that we do not like, that we are desperately trying to get rid of, but there's a great likelihood that this dog has never been effectively punished at the right time as this behavior's happened.
Yeah.
Right.
So that's where I would have to read the situation, but I would almost like feel comfortable muzzle, maybe e-collar, slip leash, pager. So pager's just the vibrate. Yeah. And I would be working on almost setting the dog up, essentially.
Yeah.
I'd have my kibble in a treat pouch, the muzzle, like a Baskerville, which allows the dog. Allows the dog to take food. And then if he does have a go at you, you can get pinched through it. Worst case, I've been pinched through it, but hey, I'll take that, you know? Yeah. So, but then as soon as he decides to say, he's almost like, again, it's a bratty type of thing. I want to say, like, I'm upset I didn't get the food faster. I'm upset it's stuck to your hand. I want this. I don't know that for sure because there is real resource guarding. It does exist. And that's not the case if it is. But I'm just saying, in my experience, real resource guarding is consistent. Right now, you take food out, you're paying him, we're good. It gets stuck in your hand, and then he's like, meh, I want it now. And you're like, oh shit, boom, and then he hits you. So to me, like as a professional, I want to be careful about how I'm saying this, and I want to be clear that you can't just correct away real resource guarding. But this isn't really particularly striking me as real resource guarding because of the inconsistency that he's having with it. Because it almost is like, give me the food, thank you, give me the food, thank you, give me the food. Hold on a second. Nope, boom. So he's like getting upset that it's not getting to him faster or something. I don't know. So my point is like, I'd be interested to have I have my own collar with Dogtra and
yeah, we bought it.
Okay, cool. So it has the pager, right? So it would be slip leash, pager on my hip, and it would be hand feeding. And same thing. Come on, buddy. Good. Pay. Good. Sit. Pay. And then I would be testing him because I have a muzzle. Mm-hmm. I have the slip. I can stop him in six different ways. I'm not worried. Nobody's going to get hurt. I can work with this, right? I'm like one of those little divers in the shark cages, right? And so when he comes at me, leave it, boom, he gets corrected for it, and I'm teaching him. And sometimes that's where we see a lot of breakthroughs. There's a dog on my YouTube channel named Creature. He's like a staffy, like American staffy. So it looks like a pit bull, but he's not. A terrier. They're just a terrier, right? They're just very drivey. And this dog, it surprised me so much how well he did with corrections. He was so intense about other dogs. Like he was really leash reactive to other dogs. He was so intense. I did not think he was ever going to snap out of it ever. I'm like looking at him and it doesn't matter how strong you are or whatever, like no correction. I was like, this guy's, it's just going to be really a lot of avoidance and management. And I'm pretty sure we ended up using like the e-collar and he just, as soon as we used it, he was like, yeah, I'm good. I don't want to do that anymore. And all we used was just the vibrate and it helped so much. So those are the first things I would start to say, like, hey, if we can isolate that the problem is a young, drivey, confused, opportunistic, bratty dog that's never really been punished, I can isolate that within an hour. Because what I can do is I can hand feed the dog. If he does get frustrated and try to have a go at me, I can correct the dog with the pager and then see how he reacts and responds. Like if he's freaked out by it, then that's good because that's that type of behavior then turns on that. And once he clicks, because he's smart, he's like, I don't want to do that again. And then it gives me an opportunity to teach him. Now, of course, devil's advocate is, as I'm developing this dog, I would be able to tell you if I was just pushing down a problem to then pop up somewhere else. That the only way you'd be able to tell that's happening is looking at the dog. How frustrated is the dog getting? How anxious is the dog getting? These are all things as a professional in years and years and years of experience to say like, okay, this is, but sometimes you just get a dog and they're like, I didn't really know that was bad until just right now. So,
based on what you know with canine, you have a pretty good sense that they'll do some version of what you just explain?
I'm not sure. I am so out of the box. I don't think anybody, unless they watch what I do, does what I do. it seems, I don't know. Because like what I just told you guys is something I just thought of today. I don't know. That's where I would start. Like I would just start there.
The part of our question was how will they reproduce or elicit what we're experiencing so they can try to correct it.
Is it a Borden train that you're doing?
Yes.
Yeah.
But well, he comes home on the weekends.
Okay. House is going to be quiet for the week.
Yeah.
They should, if they have them for long enough, you know, they'll take their time and get that when they need to. See, I never have time with dogs. That's the thing about my training, which is I think has allowed me to get sharp, you know, is because I, at the absolute most time I have with dogs collectively would be maybe 3 hours at the most. Like that's the most I've had with dogs in years. I never have dogs. And that's over a 2-day seminar. Like they'll have an accumulation with me for 3 days, and that's why I'm sorry, 3 hours. And that's why I focus and I'm so heavy on education to the owner. Cause I try to find the problem, fix the problem or isolate the problem and then teach the owner how to help with it. So quickly that's my way of training is that's why, again, I think it'd be like, constantly being on America's Chef thing where you're just always like all eyes are on you. You have a little bit of time to make the best dish of your life, like every day. And that's just been my career. Like that's all I have time for, you know? So my point is with having more time, they may do something completely different. They may only walk the dog for the first week. I don't know. So I doubt they're going to go immediately into what I'm talking about, but I think, and I don't know who you're working with over there, but you know, you could certainly go over some of the notes and some of the things and some of the ideas that I've been throwing out of like, you know, I don't know who's there anymore. I haven't been there in years. It would be a matter of, wait a minute, let's just see if this dog has ever been told no, because hey, we're going to be in a really good place if this dog responds well to punishment. Where he's like, again, he's been conditioned that if he growls, lunges, barks, or bites, that we all say, "Hey, take the bank. Here, what else do you want? You know, do you want the will? Do you want the car? What else do you want? The deed to the house?" And that's kind of like what it's been right now. But I would be setting him up in the scenarios to say, "Hey, your usual MO of getting what you want doesn't work with me, bud." And then we might have a dog go, "Okay, what do you want me to do next?" And then I've seen that happen. Like I've seen that happen many times. There's hundreds of videos on my YouTube channel of that happening. But my experience is I'd be able to tell you what that is by handling the dog after. And what I'm looking for after is a couple things. I'm looking if a dog is still eyeing me like, "You mother, oh, I hate you. I can't wait to get you." Or it would be like, "Yeah, you know what? You're right. This is way better than acting the way I did." I've seen it. I've seen straight confusion where dogs are like, "What?" I've never, you know, they've never been punished before, like for that. So there's just a lot to do. But I think my suggestion is you guys have already spent so much time and efforts and resources into doing what you're doing. And I think that the camp that you have him signed up for is a good camp. And I think just letting them bring him into their shop for those weeks will get you a better idea. If you still after that are struggling with like just finding out more about the dog, you could always come up to me for a weekend. Cause that's really what I do is I'm just a consultant. Like I don't train dogs. I educate people. On like, I tell you like, "Hey, this is what this is. Here's the things you need to do to make it better. It's up to you whether or not you can do it. That's it." And usually we get results like that. Like we get results that weekend. Like every video you see are people who I only see for 2 days and they've traveled from all over the country. And it's usually like, "Whoa, this is a lot different." And, but it's not like, sometimes it's not realistically sustainable because the dogs are tired and I'm around, so the teacher's there, and the real work goes home when the owners go home and start working. So I think you have a lot of options, but I think most importantly is you guys are doing all the right things. Most people that I work with, once they get to me, they're doing the right thing, but they've done all the wrong things. They're doing everything wrong. I think you guys are doing it right. I think just you should set it up very structured, like you probably already are, putting him on the leash, doing a little bit of obedience, letting him play, bringing him back in, lots of physical and mental exercise for him. And then, you know, just know at the end of the day, you're going to bring him to somebody next week, and they're going to hopefully be able to give you a lot more information than I could, because they're, you know, they got that. Yeah.
Great. Thank you.
You're welcome.
So much. If after the 6 weeks, if we're at a crossroads of what to do and we need some more advice, we can do another.
Yeah, of course.
Another consultation.
Yeah, of course. Okay. Of course. Absolutely. And, absolutely. We could do that.
And are there resources for replacing dogs like him? I mean, or is it just who you know and random research that?
It's tough because, I mean, dogs are getting put down. Like, great dogs are getting put down every day. Puppies are getting put down every day. Like, there's not enough resources for people to help dogs. And so it's really about who you know and finding the right spot. But again, you guys have such a good advantage because, again, it's like buying a car that somebody already spent all the money tuning up. The work's already done. You just have to drive off with it because you're experiencing this and I'm not. So think about that. Like, hey, this dog has a solid, good 6 weeks in a good company, you know, 4 weeks at a not a decent company, you know, So you just, again, don't stress yourself over it too much. Just take it day by day, week by week, and just figure out what this dog is and let the professionals do their job and they'll tell you. And then you say, okay. And then you start kind of putting your feelers out there and say like, hey, you know, this dog needs this home that we can't provide. And, you know, you guys are doing you guys are helping this dog out more than you know, even though you may feel like it's not helpful and you may feel like you're not progressing, but trust me, you guys are doing more than most people would ever dream of doing. So just take it slowly. Don't be so hard on yourself. Figure this dog out a little bit over the next couple months. And then once you feel like you got a good hand on the dog and you feel like the dog could be safe in a particular home, then you start looking for those resources.
Okay. Sounds good.
All right.
Thank you, Tom.
You're welcome.
We appreciate it.
You're welcome. Good luck.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. All right,
have a good night.
You're welcome.
Take care.
Bye-bye. All right, you guys, you've reached the end of the podcast, which means I'm going to be answering three of your dog training questions. First one comes from Monk Poker Face. Awesome podcast for humans. 5 stars. Thank you so much. What do you suggest for a mobile dog groomer to groom difficult to groom dogs? Lick, lipping, lifting up, growling, biting, for instance, the fear-free positive reinforcement approach, or is there another way to show a dog what they are doing is unwelcome? Is there a dog groomer dog training course? It's a good question. This came up in my seminar because I had a bunch of dog groomers in the attendance. I think this is one of those situations that you're either comfortable working with. Like, you have a knack and an instinct to work with some of these dogs, or you don't. That's why a lot of people that were in my seminar, the groomers, were just like, there's a lot of people who just won't touch these dogs because they just want to groom the dog and get on to the next one. So I don't really have any specifics about this, but I can say I think it would be really helpful for you to like understand how to read the body language and know what to look for, and also know how to build a relationship with the dog without kind of pressing boundaries. But there is no course for it. I'm not really big on like coining like fear-free positive. Like, fear-free is just a marketing campaign that a company used. That this is just bullshit. Like, fear-free positive approach. There's positive reinforcement in every single bit of dog training, always. It's just what marketing people like to do. So I don't know how to answer that one, but What do I suggest? I suggest continuing to work with these dogs and figure out how to handle it. It's kind of like the way that I'm reading this is, how do you work with an aggressive dog? Is just, you just do. I don't know. You just do it. Yeah, that's a tough one. Sorry. Usually I like to give a little bit more, but anyway, KMREE, Country Dog, City Dog, Texas Healer. This is an excellent podcast, and I really appreciate how you share the information so we can learn. You are indeed an excellent people trainer. Thank you. I'm leaving the start of the question. I have adopted a 4-year-old runaway intact Texas Healer while living on a farm, but I actually live in a big city. He's such a good, awesome dog. He likes other dogs, loves people. He's generous and sweet. He learns fast and likes to please, but can get sassy and is hard to recall. No food motivation when focused or distracted. Not that interested in playtime. Doesn't care about toys. Mostly wants to snuggle, chase, and pee on everything in the city. I live in a tiny apartment on a busy street, so it's a little hard to eliminate distractions and getting training space. I may as well have had moved him to the moon. I have a slip lead and I've been working on the fundamentals every day, but would like some advice on how to best support him and me with his transition. How do I best get him focused? I think creating focus takes time, first of all. So if he's not that motivated by much, I wouldn't give him access to the things that he wants without focus. Everybody's focus is going to be different. If you're talking about him looking at you, make him look at you before you move out of a door. Make him look at you before you heal. Make him look at you before you give him treats. Start cueing it up with the focus command. The other way that you can get a dog engaged with you on a leash is doing directional changes and not going into one direction all the time. Back up, inside turns, outside turns. I did that on my last podcast, two podcasts ago, 144, I think it is, on a reactive German Shepherd giving dog owner a run for their money, I think. Or maybe it's the one before that. But basically, listen to my dog reactivity blueprint episode on how to heal a dog and tune a dog up to get them to pay attention to you. How do I basic train this dog in advanced training environment? I would start off with inside, work your way out, work your way in the hallways, work your way in your apartment, work your way in public places. Are all going to be probably less distracting than outside. Would you recommend a more serious collar to get his attention? I think a slip leash is fine. Slip leash should work completely fine. I'm working with him on a busy street and we are both getting extremely frustrated. Holding him accountable is not working with such distracted environments. Should be bribing him until he learns the motions. No, I think he should learn the motions before you get out into those environments. So don't ask too much of him either. Like, don't just try to heal him a little bit and give him a break. Make sure you have a break command. I'm building my practice and consistency and I want to learn. I'm worried about harming him by trying to adopt him into my life. Yeah, I mean, that's also at the end of the day, like, that's what this podcast is about. Maybe this dog would be happier somewhere else where he can be a working dog. So all of those things, yeah, they're there. Good question. CS0261, litter mates. I have just started listening to this podcast and I'm so excited. I love how much emphasis there is on the person rather than the dog. It really makes me rethink everything I'm doing. That's good, I think. A question. I have two German Shepherd puppies that are 7 months old. I've had them since they were 5 weeks old. The guy selling them obviously didn't care about them. I've been walking them separately and training them separately with Clicker, but I'm struggling a bit because I'm using their food for training. Excuse me. First, then treats after they finish their daily food, but they aren't very food-driven at all. Very toy-driven, prey-driven. How can I train them with such low food drive? I would just use a ball. It's that simple. I'd just use a ball. That's the best thing to do. Just get a ball out, use that, use a toy. Just do it incrementally. So if you're working on heel, it would be heel, 1, 2, 3, throw the ball. If it's recall, it's just holding the ball up and they can crush it when they get to you. And that's how you do it. So not every dog is going to do well with food, and that's okay. I think you just have to make sure you get creative on how to pay the dog. And I think by using an item is good, like a tug toy or a wedge. Like I just bought a wedge for my dog, like a bite wedge. So you just have to get creative to see what your dog likes. And then that's what I have to do. I have a whole toolbox of things that I say, hey, this is all the things that I have. And these are the things I'm going to do. And yeah. So anyway, good luck. And thank you guys for listening as always. And I will talk to you next week. Thank you so much. Bye.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger. For the ones who get it done.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.